As I went downstairs soon after, I saw something I liked. The flights are very long in this tall house, and as I stood waiting at the head of the third one for a little servant girl to lumber up, I saw a gentleman come along behind her, take the heavy hod of coal out of her hand, carry it all the way up, put it down at the door nearby, and walk away, saying with a kind nod and a foreign accent, "It goes better so. The little back is too young to have such heaviness." Wasn't it good of him? I like such things, for as father says, trifles show character. When I mentioned it to Mrs. K. that evening, she laughed and said, "That must have been Professor Bear. He's always doing things of that sort." Mrs. K. told me he was from Berlin, very learned and good, but poor as a church mouse, and gives lessons to support himself and two little orphan nephews whom he is educating here, according to the wishes of his sister, who married an American. Not a very romantic story, but it interested me, and I was glad to hear that Mrs. K. lends him her parlour for some of his scholars. There is a glass door between it and the nursery, and I mean to peep at him, and then I'll tell you how he looks. He's almost 40, so it's no harm, Marmy. After tea and a go-to-bed romp with the little girls, I attacked the big work-basket and had a quiet evening chatting with my new friend. I shall keep a journal letter and send it once a week. So, good night, and more tomorrow. Tuesday Eve. Had a lively time in my seminary this morning, for the children acted like Sancho, and at one time I really thought I should shake them all round. Some good angel inspired me to try gymnastics, and I kept it up till they were glad to sit down and keep still. After luncheon, the girl took them out for a walk, and I went to my needlework like little Mabel with a willing mind. I was thanking my stars that I'd learned to make nice buttonholes, when the parlour door opened and shut, and someone began to hum, "Kennst du das Land?" like a big bumblebee. It was dreadfully improper, I know, but I couldn't resist the temptation, and lifting one end of the curtain before the glass door, I peeped in. Professor Bear was there, and while he arranged his books, I took a good look at him. A regular German, rather stout, with brown hair tumbled all over his head, a bushy beard, good nose, the kindest eyes I ever saw, and a splendid big voice that does one's ears good after our sharp or slipshod American gabble. His clothes were rusty, his hands were large, and he hadn't a really handsome feature in his face except his beautiful teeth. Yet I liked him, for he had a fine head, his linen was very nice, and he looked like a gentleman, though two buttons were off his coat and there was a patch on one shoe. He looked sober in spite of his humming, till he went to the window to turn the hyacinth bulbs toward the sun and stroke the cat, who received him like an old friend. Then he smiled, and when a tap came at the door, called out in a loud, brisk tone, "Herr Wein!" I was just going to run when I caught sight of a morsel of a child carrying a big book and stopped to see what was going on.
"Me wants my bear," said the mite, slamming down her book and running to meet him.
"Thou shalt have thy bear. Come, then, and take a good hug from him, my Tina," said the professor, catching her up with a laugh and holding her so high over his head that she had to stoop her little face to kiss him.
"Now me must study my lesson," went on the funny little thing.
So he put her up at the table, opened the great dictionary she had brought, and gave her a paper and pencil, and she scribbled away, turning a leaf now and then, and passing her little fat finger down the page, as if finding a word. So soberly I nearly betrayed myself by a laugh, while Mr. Bear stood stroking her pretty hair with a fatherly look that made me think she must be his own, though she looked more French than German. Another knock, and the appearance of two young ladies sent me back to my work, and there I virtuously remained through all the noise and gabbing that went on next door. One of the girls kept laughing affectedly and saying, "Now, Professor," in a coquettish tone, and the other pronounced her German with an accent that must have made it hard for him to keep sober. Both seemed to try his patience sorely, for more than once I heard him say emphatically,
"No, no, it is not so. You have not attend to what I say."
And once there was a loud rap, as if he struck the table with his book, followed by the despairing exclamation,
"Prut! It all goes bad this day."
Poor man, I pitied him. and when the girls were gone, took just one more peep to see if he survived it. He seemed to have thrown himself back in his chair, tired out, and sat there with his eyes shut till the clock struck two. When he jumped up, put his books in his pocket, as if ready for another lesson, and taking little Tina, who had fallen asleep on the sofa, in his arms, he carried her quietly away. I fancy he has had a hard life of it. Mrs. Kirk asked me if I wouldn't go down to the 5 o'clock dinner, and feeling a little bit homesick, I thought I would, just to see what sort of people are under the same roof with me. So I made myself respectable, and tried to slip in behind Mrs. Kirk. But as she is short and I'm tall, my efforts at concealment were rather a failure. She gave me a seat by her, and after my face cooled off, I plucked up courage and looked about me. The long table was full, and everyone intent on getting their dinner, the gentlemen especially, who seemed to be eating on time, for they bolted in every sense of the word, vanishing as soon as they were done. There was the usual assortment of young men absorbed in themselves, young couples absorbed in each other, married ladies and their babies, and old gentlemen in politics. I don't think I shall care to have much to do with any of them, except one sweet-faced maiden lady, who looks as if she had something in her. Cast away at the very bottom of the table was the professor, shouting answers to the questions of a very inquisitive, deaf old gentleman on one side, and talking philosophy with the Frenchman on the other. If Amy had been here, she'd have turned her back on him forever, because, sad to relate, he had a great appetite, and shovelled in his dinner in a manner which would have horrified her ladyship. I didn't mind, for I liked to see folks eat with a relish, as Hannah says, and the poor man must have needed a deal of food after teaching idiots all day. As I went upstairs after dinner, two of the young men were settling their hats before the hall mirror, and I heard one say low to the other, "Who's the new party?" "Governess, or something of that sort." "What the deuce is she at our table for?" "Friend of the old lady's." "Handsome head, but no style." "Not a bit of it. Give us a light and come on." I felt angry at first, and then I didn't care, for a governess is as good as a clerk, and I've got sense if I haven't style, which is more than some people have, judging from the remarks of the elegant beings who clattered away, smoking like bad chimneys. I hate ordinary people. Thursday. Yesterday was a quiet day spent in teaching, sewing, and writing in my little room, which is very cozy, with a light and fire. I picked up a few bits of news and was introduced to the professor. It seems that Tina is the child of the Frenchwoman who does the fine ironing and the laundry here. The little thing has lost her heart to Mr. Bear, and follows him about the house like a dog whenever he is at home, which delights him, as he is very fond of children, though a bachelor. Kitty and Minnie Kirk likewise regard him with affection, and tell all sorts of stories about the plays he invents, the presents he brings, and the splendid tales he tells. The young men quiz him, it seems, call him Old Fritz, Lagerbier, Ursa Major, and make all manner of jokes on his name. But he enjoys it like a boy, Mrs. Kay says, and takes it so good-naturedly that they all like him in spite of his foreign ways. The maiden lady is a Miss Norton, rich, cultivated, and kind. She spoke to me at dinner today, for I went to table again, it's such fun to watch people, and asked me to come and see her at her room. She has fine books and pictures, and knows interesting persons, and seems friendly, so I shall make myself agreeable, for I do want to get into good society, only it isn't the same sort that Amy likes. I was in our parlour last evening when Mr. Bear came in with some newspapers for Mrs. Kirk. She wasn't there, but Minnie, who is a little old woman, introduced me very prettily. "This is Mama's friend, Miss March." "Yes, and she's jolly, and we like her lots," added Kitty, who is an enfant terrible. We both bowed, and then we laughed, for the prim introduction and the blunt addition were rather a comical contrast.
"Oh, yes, I hear these naughty ones go to vex you, Miss Marsh. If so again, call at me and I come," he said, with a threatening frown that delighted the little wretches.
I promised I would, and he departed. But it seems as if I was doomed to see a good deal of him, for today, as I passed his door on my way out, by accident I knocked against it with my umbrella. It flew open, And there he stood in his dressing gown, with a big blue sock on one hand and a darning needle in the other. He didn't seem at all ashamed of it, for when I explained and hurried on, he waved his hand, sock and all, saying in his loud, cheerful way,
"You have a fine day to make your walk. Bon voyage, mademoiselle."
I laughed all the way downstairs, but it was a little pathetic.